welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and coming up in this hour, mystery programs. We'll enjoy suspense later in the hour, but right now it's the SQP caper on the adventures of Sam Spade. From creator Dashiell Hammett, the CBS and Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast from November 7th, 1948, starring Howard Duff and Lorene Tuttle.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. I'm looking over the falling.
Broken glass, but there's something terribly wrong with my typewriters.
Looks okay to me. Those old models stand up, Ep. They don't make them like that nowadays.
Well, I should hope they don't. Somebody shot it.
SQP again.
No, the alphabet is all right, Sam. It's just the one key.
One missing?
No, but it's Sam. This one right here, Sam. Look at the app and Sam.
That makes sense. You won't need it for this one. Come on in.
Oh, Sam, wasn't I smart? I got the answer right away.
The answer to what?
That which you referred to, Sam, is the whole ghastly riddle. SQP, to be exact.
Well, I was tired.
Of course you were. And besides, I was right here where I can see it, right out the window. The neon sign, Sam, over the Misty drugstore.
Yeah.
See? Like that. Stability, quality, purity. And a blink.
Say.
Wasn't I smart, Sam? Wasn't I?
Yeah, of course you were. But that isn't quite the answer.
Well, what is that?
That's through Detective Lieutenant Dundee, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police, from S. Spade, Life, Na, 137596. Subject, the SQP caper. The minute she walked into my office, I smelled trouble. But it also smelled like $50 an ounce. She was small and brunette. Her eyes were large, appealing, and moist. But her pitch was disappointing.
And now I realize that what he really came to San Francisco for was to be with her. This isn't the first time, Mr. Spade. There have been others. I don't know who this woman is, and I don't care. This time I intend to do something about it. They're registered at the Belvedere Hotel, and I want you to go if you can...
Just a moment, Mrs. Spade.
Yes?
I think I know what you're leading up to. You want a detective to go with you and be a witness so you'll have grounds for divorce. Is that it?
Yes. I can't go on any longer with a man I can't trust. Oh, it's so humiliating.
Now, Mrs. Pierce, please, I do sympathize with you. Honest, I do, but I can't take the job.
After I poured out my heart to you, exposed myself.
Oh, now, please, it's not as bad as that. It happens every day. It's just that I don't take divorce cases, but I do know a detective who might help you. You'll be much better off with me.
But I'm sure I'd feel much better with you.
Maybe after your divorce, Mrs.
Patricia, my friends call me Pat.
All right, Pat, I'll see what I can do.
Belvedere Hotel. Good afternoon.
Tiny Stover on duty. Tell him Sam Spade.
Just a moment.
Who is he, Mr. Spade?
Friend of mine. House detective at the Belvedere, but he likes to pick up an extra fee now and then.
Sam?
Tiny?
Sam?
Tiny?
Sam?
Roger.
Who?
Look, Tiny, I'll stop if you will.
Oh, Sam?
Yes.
What's with you?
Yeah, about a guest in your register, Pierce, Donald, Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, yeah, sure. Clerk gave you the high sign on him. Pierce, yeah. Checked in alone, but registered for both, Sam. Said the wife would be along later, but it's okay. She finally got here.
Yeah? Well,
yeah.
His wife is in my office now.
Huh?
She wants to crash the party.
Oh, I get it.
Want the job?
Well, Sam, I can't take it for a private fee. It's against the house rules, you know.
Oh, too bad.
But wait, Sam. I go off duty in half an hour. Maybe I could do it incommunicado, huh? Send her around, Sam.
Okay, Tiny, will do.
Will he help me, Mr. Spade?
Yeah. Ask at the desk for Tiny subscriber, but don't let that put you off. He's an all right guy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Spade. You've been very kind. Goodbye.
Good luck.
Sam, what happened? Why did she leave so quickly?
For the same reason you shouldn't have let her in the first place, Effie. There was a divorce job.
Oh, but Sam, she looked so refined and all. And being the first of the month, I thought you might take exception.
I do.
Of course, you know best, Sam. But it seems to me you might welcome a little change now and then. I know you feel it's underneath you, but it's such nice safe work. And between 9 and midnight alone, you could...
Effie, there are two words for that kind of work.
What, Sam?
Never mind.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Oh, just a moment, Mr. Stover. It's Danny Stover, Sam.
What does he want?
I don't know. I think he's crying.
He's crying?
Yeah.
I'll take it. Tiny?
Sam?
Yeah. What's up, Tiny?
That dame you sent over here. Listen, I better not take time telling you. Get over here. Room 418. Come in the side entrance and walk up.
What happened?
I cannot tell you over the phone. Just get over here, Sam, and hurry.
It's me, Tiny. Sam, open up.
Come in, Sam. Sort of ease in, will you? He's lying in the way of the door.
The first thing I saw as I squeezed through the narrow crack of the door was the brunette that had visited my office that afternoon. She was handcuffed to a chair, and a gag had been stuffed into her mouth. Tiny's frightened eyes shifted uneasily from her to the body on the floor.
What kind of a caper is this, Sam?
You better tell me, Tiny, what happened. Who handcuffed her to the chair?
I did. We broke in just like it says in the book, only there was no dame here, just him. He starts to jump the wife, and I grab him. The next thing I know, he's got my gun. I try to twist it out of his hand. The next thing I know, bang. He's right where he's laying now, and he's dead. Next thing I know, the dame is grabbing for the phone and screaming that I murdered him. That's when I decided I'd better shut her up for a while so you and me can compare notes on this thing.
Well, first we better get some notes to compare. Now, listen, Pat, I'm going to pull this gag out of your mouth, but if you start screaming, it's going right back in. Get it?
Now let me out of these handcuffs.
Yeah, we'll get around to that. Now, first, I want to put you straight on something. I know that Tiny here went into this on the level, which is more than I know about you. So if there are any angles in this cable besides the story you told in my office, let's have them now before the cops get here.
All right. I lied to you. I never saw this man before in my life.
Shut up, Tiny. Go on.
I was hired by a man named Christopher. He advertised for a photographer. He said he specialized in photographs for legal evidence, and this man Lombard's wife wanted, well, she wanted a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do it at first, but the pay was good, and he said it was good experience for newspaper work, which is what I want to do. So I took it.
Why didn't you tell me that in my office?
Those were his instructions. He said that's the way they did it, and any detective would understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sure you did when you wouldn't take the job.
Hey, wait a minute. I don't get it, Sam. Is she some nut or something, or is she just dumb?
I guess I'm just dumb.
No comment. Let's get some facts. Your name?
Patricia Vane. My friends call me Pat. That part of my story was true. I studied photography at Berkeley. And...
Yeah, yeah. Now, this guy that hired you.
Well, he was an office in the Fidelity Building, where all the divorce lawyers are.
Full name?
Calvin Christopher. It says on his office door, Public Relations Counsel. That's room 842 in the back.
You ain't swallow, Miss Yon, are you, Spade?
Finally, go sit down.
I didn't say nothing.
Check. Now, Pat, is this your story? You and Tiny came in here together. Lombard jumped you. Tiny grabbed him. There was a scuffle and a gun went off.
Yes. I just opened my purse to take my camera out.
Where's the camera?
I don't know. In the excitement. Oh, that looks like it over there. Over there by the phone. Be careful. There's some exposed film in it. It might have a clue.
What did you shoot?
Oh, some fishing boats. And one I featured Mr. Christopher himself. And some action shots of what just happened here. Do you think the police will confiscate my camera?
No, I will. I saw it first.
Hey, Sam, where you going?
I'm going to do some fishing.
Sam, you can't leave me holding the bag. You got me into this.
You want to get out, don't you?
Yeah, but...
Okay, keep me in the clear. You'll have somebody working for you. I felt like a cab dummy, but there was nothing I could tell you that they couldn't tell better as eyewitnesses, so I left them there to face you and your homicide boys alone. My first stop after leaving the Belvedere was Ledkin's Lightning Photo Finishes, where I left Pat's camera and film. Then I mushed across town to the Fidelity Building. It said on the door, sure enough, room 842, Calvin Christopher, Public Relations Counsel.
Well, sir, what can I do for you?
You, Calvin Christopher?
I am.
I'd like to ask you some questions.
Detective?
You hired a girl named Patricia Vane to take some pictures in the Belvedere Hotel, right?
Why, no. I advertised for a photographer, but so far no applicants.
What do you need a photographer for, Mr. Christopher?
Well, that, sir, with all due respect, is none of your business. There's nothing illegal in advertising for a photographer. and if I had employed one, I would tell you so.
That's a straight answer. Then your story is that you did not employ Miss Vane and that you have no knowledge of her.
That is my story.
The girl's story is that she was here in this office and even snapped a picture of you. That film is being developed now. Don't want to stick with that statement?
Look, friend, you do not have to be acquainted with a person in order to have your picture taken by him. Or her, as the case may be.
I know that, but if your picture shows in that film, I'll know you're lying. Mind if I use your phone? Thanks.
Homicide. Lieutenant Dundee.
Dundee, Sam Spade. That girl you're holding in the Pierce death, Hotel Belvedere.
What girl, Sam? Who's Pierce?
Tiny Stover gave you the rumble. He did, didn't he?
Not yet, Sam.
Well, you're getting it now. Stiff in room 418. Gunshot. I'll meet you there. And I did. I won't dwell on that part of it, Lieutenant Dear. You were cross with me, and I didn't blame you. Pierce's body was still there, and it was still dead. But there was no brunette, no house stick, no gun, and no bullet wound. The medic called it death from natural cause, heart attack. But the worst was yet to come. When I rushed down to Ludkin's to get those pictures just to prove to you that I wasn't completely out of my mind, there were no fishing boats, no pickets, no Mr. Christopher, and no struggle. Nothing but pictures of a complete set of dental x-rays. There was a date on them, 7-14-48, and some initials, S-Q-T.
The United States Armed Forces Radio Service is presenting the weekly adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
S.Q.P. Seems very familiar somehow. Society of Quail Prevention? Mm-mm, too neat. After you and your boys had cleared out, Dundee, I went back to room 418. I wondered who had fired the shot that both Tiny and the brunette believed had killed Mr. Pierce. I didn't find out, but I did find a .38 slug in the floor under the rug pad. The fibrous material had been scuffed by somebody's foot to hide the bullet hole. Tiny had been reaching for the phone as I left. According to the operator, there'd been no flash on her board from 418. That meant that whoever had stopped them had done so in a matter of seconds. I didn't know whether it had been done with a kiss, at gunpoint, or with a blunt instrument. I doubted anybody would have knocked Tiny out because he was too heavy to carry down 8 flights of stairs. I checked Tiny's room on the first floor. It had been ripped to pieces by somebody who obviously had been searching for something no bigger than, say, a roll of film. About there, I decided to go and pay my respects to the late Mr. Pierce.
Good evening, sir. I'm Converse Etheridge.
You never remember me, do you?
Was it in connection with the columbarium?
No, we decided against it.
Oh? Which was your dear departed?
Pierce. Donald Pierce, late afternoon pickup at the Belvedere.
Oh, dear, he's still on the slab. I mean, he's not quite ready to be viewed. Would you like to see the floral tribute? They're truly lovely.
Who made the arrangements?
Mrs. C. A truly lovely tribute. Small, but perfect. A heart-shaped wreath with their initials intertwined. D.P. from S.P.
Yes, that isn't S.Q.P.
No, sir. The middle initial is usually omitted, that is, if desired, in the 3250 tribute.
Of course, I'll go to them.
By Jove, I do remember you. The detective, Mr. Spade. Good heavens. Foul play in regard to our Mr. P?
I'm not sure, Mr. Etheridge, but maybe you can help. These x-rays. Could you check and see if they're his?
Why, surely. Oh, dental x-rays. Needn't spend the time.
No use?
No teeth. A completely dentured subject. For a good 10 years, I would say. Oh, pardon me. Something, madam.
I'm Sandra Pierce. I've come to
see
about your
ring. Oh, yes, if you'll just wait. Do you know Mr. Spade?
Oh, they told me at the hotel. Very fortunate that you're here, Mr. Spade.
Well, I'll go and see how things are backstage. I'll see you later.
Oh, these awful things that people must go through when death comes.
No, it's not pleasant. Were you married long?
2 years. We were married in prison, you know.
What?
I suppose it shouldn't be a surprise to me. We both knew it could happen at any time.
You mean he'd been sick quite a while?
Yes, coronary effusion.
Heart trouble, huh? Then you agree that's what killed him?
I agree that... Do you have any reason to think otherwise, Mr. Spade?
Well, I think you know more about it than I do.
His physical condition?
Let's start with yours. How are your teeth?
I don't understand.
These your x-rays?
What? Oh, heavens, no, this is a man's mouth. Where did you get these? What are they supposed to mean?
I think they mean blackmail. Teeth and fingerprints are two of the best identity clinches. These initials, SQP, could be Sandra something Pierce. Are they yours?
No.
Do the initials SQP mean anything to you?
Well, only if I thought, of course, the prison.
The what?
San Quentin prison.
San Quentin? Oh, I've been stupid. That's what you meant, married in prison.
Of course, I thought you knew. Donald was head of the prison dental laboratory there for 11 years.
I sat down and gaped at her. She went on telling me how she'd been his assistant at the prison, how he'd had to quit because the prison routine was too tough for his heart condition, and how he'd bade her a tearful farewell because he didn't have any prospects and couldn't ask her to marry.
Then, practically the first day he arrived in San Francisco, he wired me to come here immediately and we'd be married. A relative had died and left him $20,000 and more was coming in. He wouldn't even have to work anymore. He could retire. And that was wonderful because he really wasn't well enough to work. They're not listening to me. What are you thinking about?
$20,000 from a relative. Never explained it any better than that, huh?
No. A man came, a lawyer, I guess it was. I suppose he brought the money because Donald took it to the bank next morning.
Where were you?
Donald sent me out of the room, but I was afraid to go too far away. He was so excited, and he was feeling these angina pains. I just stayed outside in the hall, smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't hear anything they said. But then the door opened, and the man stood there and said, "Don, I had no idea your ticker was so bad. Someday somebody's going to say boo to you and you'll drop dead."
That's what I figured, Mrs. Pierce. I think your husband was murdered. He was literally frightened to death. I had almost all of it now. Just a name and a number were missing, and I thought I might have them in my office under SQP. There was a light showing in my outer office as I came down the hall. It went out as I turned the doorknob.
Stop right where you are. I've got a gun.
That you, Pat?
Oh, it's you, Sam. You were so long, I thought you'd never...
Hey, don't do that. Here. Come on, honey. Don't give up like that. Here. Drink this. What happened?
Oh, I'm so tired. My ankle, I think I broke it. I jumped out of the car.
Let's see. I think it's just a sprain. Christopher's car?
We were in the back. He slowed down on the ramp. There was something stuffed in my mouth. I couldn't make a sound. What's funny?
I'm sorry, baby, but you seem to have spent the entire day bound and gagged. I'm sorry. Go on.
Oh, after you left us in that awful hotel room, he came in, and he was furious. Wanted to know why we had spoiled everything by letting the gun go off. Even though Mr. Stover explained that it was only accidental.
Yeah.
And then he started laughing and said he was only fooling, and he would take charge. So Mr. Stover left. And then Mr. Christopher held a gun on me and took me down the hall to another room. He pushed me in there, and then he tied me to a chair and put the gag in me.
I'm sorry, honey. So he let you cool off in there until it got dark enough and late enough to get you downstairs and in the car without attracting too much attention. You say he was heading over the bridge to Oakland, huh?
Yeah. Why are you shouting so?
I guess I'm just excited. And I was, but not over Pat's story. It was something I'd just seen, the shadow of a man against the frosted glass of my office door. I went on talking, I hoped loud enough for him to hear every word I said. Pat, I don't know how to tell you this. It's going to make you feel bad, but sooner or later you'll have to know about it. This guy named Calvin Christopher, that isn't his right name, and in just a minute I think I'll have that too. He gave you a phony pitch about a photography assignment to help somebody get a divorce. But what he had in mind from the beginning was to use you as a murder weapon.
Me? A murder weapon?
You and whichever detective happened to go there with you. You see, Pierce was a blackmailer. He'd been a dentist at San Quentin, and who did he run into one day here in San Francisco but an escaped con whose teeth he had worked on and of whom, by happy chance, he had a complete set of dental x-rays. This con bought the x-rays from him for 20 grand. He's still at large and thinks he's safe now that Pierce is dead. But what he doesn't know is that Pierce took snapshots of the x-rays before he turned the originals over. The cameras got switched, and I have the x-rays right here. Look at them, sweetheart.
What are you...
Get down, lie flat. He came in shooting. I kicked the lamp out and answered him. They were all shots in the dark, but mine came closer because I had him profiled against the light. My third shot was the lucky one. It knocked the gun out of his hand, just like in the Westerns, but I was too tired to feel proud. Oh. Snap on that light, Pat, and push the phone over here, will you? Stand over away from that door, Christopher. By the way, what is that name?
Graziani.
Don't bother to smile.
Homicide.
Lieutenant Dundee.
Yes, just a jiff.
Lieutenant Dundee.
Dundee, come over to my office and pick up Victor Graziani, 39, Caucasian, San Quentin lifer, broke out July 14th this year. You owe me $11 for damage done to my office. Period. End of SQ paid.
Sam, say, did you get your bacon, please? Oh, yes, Dr. Dennis, he's right here. It's Mr. Tiny's baby, Sam.
Hello.
Sam?
Tiny?
Sam.
Who?
Tiny.
No Tiny here. Can I call you back?
Sam. Ain't you interested in what happened to me? I got a clue, Sam. What were those initials again?
SQP.
That's it, SQP. I'm here now.
Where?
Seymour Kelly's pool room.
Seymour Kelly's pool room?
Yeah.
Look, Tiny, don't even you realize that Kelly isn't spelled with a Q?
Since when, Sam?
Kelly is without a Q.
Oh, no, Sam. I think you must be wrong. He's chalking up now. His shot's coming up.
Good night, Tiny.
Sam?
Tiny, I'd like to go around again with you, but this airtime costs plenty. As you'll know, if you ever get your own radio show, which, if you did, would be sponsored by the makers of SP Stupid Pills.
Hey, Sam, you should have seen it. Seymour just made a three-cushion shot with the handcuffs on. You should have seen it. Sam?
Good night, honestly, Tiny.
Anything for me, Sam?
Just go type that up, sweetheart, and have it back in exactly 34 seconds.
Now, listen. I'm confused about who is getting divorced. Sam, you shouldn't accept divorce cases.
Effie, it was not a divorce case. You actually mean we require the usual partial recap?
Partial recap? Oh, man! The dental x-rays would have shown that, wouldn't they?
Effie, you're not happy here.
What?
You have no one to talk properly to. Have you ever thought about Tiny Stover?
Oh,
a lonely man, Effie. All his evenings free. Forced the pool rooms for diversion. Sweetheart, you could take him away from all that snooker.
Oh, Sam.
I could fix it up for you with Tiny.
Sam,
come here, sweetheart. Has anyone ever told you how lovely you are?
No. You know what always happens when you get me mixed up. I just... Oh, no. My earring. Cotton is great.
Well, say, I'll let you stay out another week.
Oh, thanks for everything.
Forget it.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Adventures of Sam Spade, Private Detective, is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
The Adventures of Sam Spade on Tuned 2 Yesterday, a CBS and later Armed Forces radio service broadcast from November 7th, 1948. At that time, it was heard on CBS radio, part of their Sunday night lineup at 8 o'clock. 12 million people had tuned in for that broadcast. And you're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. We now turn to the Columbia Broadcasting System's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, starring Mercedes McCambridge, a woman who Orson Welles once called America's greatest living radio actress. She stars alongside Richard Crenna, Byron Kane, and Jack Crucian in America's Boyfriend from July 21st, 1957.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, what is the rest of it? Well, no matter. Childish prattle can be dangerous in its pristine innocence. So if you are about to do something you shouldn't, we advise you not to do it around your moppets. They can be such blabbermouths, as the upcoming story demonstrates. Listen. Listen, then, as Miss Mercedes McCambridge stars in America's Boyfriend, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Folklore isn't always something out of the past. Each day, a new legend, anecdote, joke, or colorful character is added to our collection of Americana. Like the story about the man who was nailing shingles on his house. Somebody noticed that he was throwing half the nails away and asked him why.
Because,
he said,
the heads are on the wrong ends on those.
Well, you dope, said the other man. Those are for the other side of the house. Folklore belongs to every nation's legendary past, and I guess we Americans have our share of some tall ones. Like the one about... but we'll have to save that one for the next time we travel your way. See you then.
And now... Miss Mercedes McCambridge in America's Boyfriend. A tale well calculated to keep you in... suspense.
They used to call him America's Boyfriend. His face was known everywhere, from South Dakota to Saudi Arabia. Those mischievous eyes, that lovable teenage grin, the lock of blonde hair over his forehead. Remember First Love, his most popular movie? His freckled face was on billboards everywhere in four colors. Dickie Keith, that bad boy who steals your heart. That bouncing, laughing, wisecracking, all-American boy. It's funny. Every picture of Dickie that could be found was like that one. The police are looking for a murderer's face that doesn't exist. When he came into the kitchen that morning, I didn't know whether to laugh or feel sorry for him. I was too busy to do either. I had to fix breakfast, get the kids washed and dressed and fed, and be at work by 9. Between putting the coffee on the perk and getting the bobby pins out of my hair, I kept glancing at his calypso pants and monogram T-shirt and the tennis racket under his arm. Maybe I said the wrong things. I guess I've been saying the wrong things for a long time.
Coffee ready yet?
What are you dressed up as? Juvenile delinquent?
Oh, I got a call from the studio yesterday. I told you, Harry Landon wants to see me.
What's he got, amnesia? Did he forget the last picture you made was so bad it smelled up the theaters before it was taken out of the can?
Just black for me.
You know, maybe if you grow up, you might get a job again.
Oh, well, I see Harry today. He just bought The Sidewalk to Nowhere. Terrific book about a teenage murderer. I'll convince him I'm not too old for the lead. How old does he think I am, anyway?
Oh, please, Dickie. He's got your Social Security card.
All right. So I'm 31.
33.
Time certainly flies.
Doesn't it? Married to me 4 years already. Parents of a bright 2-year-old boy. And if you'd like any more vital statistics, you've been out of work for more than 3 years.
This coffee tastes like formaldehyde.
Well, that's the best we can afford. What time's your appointment?
Don't worry. I'll leave Lumpy with Mrs. Vogel for a few hours.
Well, be sure you wait for the laundry man first.
Okay. Okay, you support me. You pay the bills. If you like, I'll do the laundry myself.
I'm sorry, Dickie. I'm all tied up in knots. That last check that I gave the supermarket bounced. Our credit is down the drain.
Is that all?
No, and Lumpy, I know he's a lot of trouble for you to take care of.
No trouble. No, the park's peppered with kids his age.
What do you do there? Just sit around the sand pile?
Yeah. With the other doting mothers.
Are you learning anything about child psychology?
Why?
Oh, just that Lumpy's almost 2 years old. You noticed he's learning to talk?
Oh, he's been talking since he was 11 months, that one.
Well, those were just sounds, just separate words. I mean, he's just put together his first sentence.
And high time.
His first real sentence. Funny the way he keeps repeating it.
You know, maybe you're right at that. Maybe I ought to wear something more dignified. Get Lumpy ready while I change.
Come on, Lumpy. You can't dawdle over your breakfast this morning.
Daddy, go see Pretty Lady. Go see Pretty Lady.
Who is she, Lumpy?
Go see Pretty Lady.
The first time he said it was a week ago. It hit me right between the eyes. His first sentence. Something to cherish, to put in his scrapbook with his first tooth and a curl from his first haircut. His first sentence. Go see Pretty Lady. It burned in my mind all day long. But it burned deeper that night when Mrs. Vogel delivered Lumpy herself. Dickie hadn't picked him up as he was supposed to. After I got Lumpy to bed, I canvassed the neighborhood bars by phone. Nothing. Then I just sat and waited, my insides gnawed by fear and anxiety and plain old-fashioned jealousy. Then about 10 o'clock, the front door opened, and there he was. He swayed in the doorway. There was blood drying on his face. His eyes looked stupid and beaten. The only reason he was able to stay on his feet was the hand steadying him from behind, the big, powerful hand of Harry Landman. Dickie took one step inside, and then he pitched forward. A table crashed to the floor with him.
I'm sorry, Jean.
Oh, Harry, what happened?
Came to my house a couple hours ago. Lucky I wasn't alone. Should have heard of the things he called me. I wouldn't let my own mother-in-law talk to me that way.
Oh, but he didn't mean it, Harry. He must have been drinking.
Yeah, that's what I thought till he grabbed the poker from the fireplace and tried to kill me. Me, he feels like a father to the boy.
He tried to kill you?
Me and my houseman had to beat him right down into his shoes before he quit trying.
Oh, he must have been drunk.
Oh, he's out of his head. Could put him away for 10 years for this.
Harry, what did you tell him at the studio this morning?
The truth. Once and for all, that he's washed up. Now, if you're smart, you'll get him out of this town. Take him back east where he can be himself.
Himself?
Where he can grow up. Where he can get a job without his pride getting all mixed up in it. Here in Hollywood, he can't stop being America's boyfriend. He's turning into a full-fledged schizophrenic, a homicidal maniac.
You're afraid of him. Of Dickie.
I'm telling you, he's dangerous. He tried to kill me.
That's really funny. You're afraid of this thing you created, this lovable, tap-dancing monster. This horrible spirit of you.
You're blaming me?
For years you kept him a teenager. You didn't let him grow up. You made this stunted thing out of him because there was money in it.
He made plenty of money himself.
And he spent it faster than he made it. Oh, he lived apart all right. It was cute how irresponsible he was.
Look, Jean, I'm not arguing with you. I'm telling you. Get him out of my hair. Take him back east, anywhere. But do it inside of 24 hours or
I'll... what?
Well, I'll bring charges against him for assault with intent to kill.
You're forgetting something, Harry. I'm only his wife. I don't have much influence with him.
24 hours.
He's got other attachments in Hollywood besides his family.
Another woman?
Yeah.
Who?
I don't know. I heard about her from somebody. Somebody who won't talk.
Well, that's a problem I can't help you with, Jean. That's strictly your problem. Just remember, 24 hours or I'll charge him with attempted murder.
I tried to help Dickie up, but he pushed me off. He made his way to the bedroom like a bulldozer, knocking over a lamp, a chair, anything in his way. He sprawled face down on the bed, and for a long time I could hear his heavy breathing. I don't know what time it was when I fell asleep on the sofa, but in the morning, a little before 7, I looked in. He was gone. I left Lumpy with Mrs. Vogel, but I didn't go to work. I tried a dozen bars, 3 Turkish baths, every alleged friend he had. By noon, there was still no trace of him, so I went back to Charlie's and sat down at the end of the bar. Charlie shuffled toward me, his eyes refusing to meet mine.
Mrs. Keith, I'm sorry. You're wasting your time here.
Listen, I've got to find Dickie. It's terribly important, Charlie. He couldn't just disappear into thin air.
The air in this town ain't as thin as you think.
Well, if you try, maybe you can remember something. Somebody he's been in here with. Oh, Charlie, please tell me. Tell me who that woman is.
You mean the dame he was with last night?
Last night? He came back here last night?
Yeah, around 2 a.m. He was just sitting together right here. That's all I know.
What did she look like, Charlie? Could you describe her?
To me, Mrs. Keith, the dames that come in here all look as much alike as a row of bar stools.
Was she tall or short?
Kind of in between.
Well, was she a blonde or redhead or brunette? What?
I don't remember.
Well, she had hair, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She had dark hair.
Oh, thanks, Charlie. That's something, anyhow. At least I know she has hair. She isn't a midget. At 5 o'clock, I gave up. There was only one thing to do, see Harry Landman and explain that Dickie disappeared and that there was really nothing to worry about. Harry lived up above the strip. I climbed a steep incline, made a sharp turn that almost broke my steering gear, and there it was, a low pink house sitting back against the hillside. There was an ugly iron dog beside the front door. I went to the door and I pushed the bell. And somehow I knew that the man who answered the door didn't belong in that house.
Yes?
I'm Mrs. Keith. I must see Mr. Landman right away.
You want to see Mr.?
I didn't wait. I brushed right past him into a dim hall, and I stopped dead. Whatever it was that had been holding me together all day snapped. I closed my eyes to shut myself in darkness, but the thing I saw was still there, as if painted on the inside of my eyelid. It was Harry Landman, face down on the floor, with a knife sticking out of his back.
In just a moment, we continue with Suspense. Do you know the Social Security benefits to which you will be entitled when you separate from the service and take a civilian job? Here's a tip from Social Security.
1940, an important year in the security of American families. It was in 1940 that the first Social Security checks began to find their way into the mailboxes of the nation. That was the year that retired people and their families, and the families of working people who had died, began to get payments from the government insurance program to partly take the place of earnings that were no longer coming into their homes. Social Security has done much through the years to relieve the grinding worry of old people, to keep widows and their children together, living as families beneath the family roof. Just recently, within the last 5 years, Social Security has helped to relieve the financial plight of the disabled. Find out about Social Security, what you can expect from it for your security and the security of your loved ones. Write to Social Security, Department 15, Hollywood 28, California, and ask how it will work in your case. They'll be glad to give you the information and to send you a free booklet, a booklet that tells the Social Security story.
And now, we continue with the second act of America's Boyfriend, starring Miss Mercedes McCambridge. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It was a beautiful knife. It had a carved pearl handle about 4 inches long. It seemed to grow bigger as I stared at it, until it crowded everything else out of my mind, until it floated there, huge, in my nightmare. Then a small gray-haired man touched my elbow, and the knife got smaller, like a punctured balloon, and I knew it wasn't a nightmare. It was a knife sticking out of Harry Landman's back. I'd never seen a corpse before, not even a dead grandmother. I thought I was going to be sick. I was helped gently into a chair. The room was hot and stuffy with cigarette smoke. 3 other men were busy there, working as calmly and thoroughly over details as bookkeepers in an office.
We've been looking for you, Mrs. Keith.
For me?
My name is Carlson. Homicide. Actually, we're looking for your husband. We thought you might be able to tell us something.
Oh, he didn't do it.
Any idea where he is?
Well, he couldn't commit murder. He couldn't. He's not the kind who could do a terrible thing like that.
Look, after 20 years' experience, Mrs. Keith, I know what kind of people commit murders.
What kind?
Murderers.
But you're wrong about Dickie. You don't know Dickie Keith the way I do.
I know quite a few things already. I know that he threatened to kill Mr. Landman. I know he even attempted to.
But he didn't mean it.
It looks like he did.
Oh, you don't understand. He was out of work. He was trying to cope with all the responsibilities of a family. He was always trying to cover up for a feeling of insecurity.
If you don't mind, let's leave Freud out of this, huh? I'm no psychiatrist. I'm a cop. My job is to put together the facts.
There's more than facts. There's the truth.
The truth is he's disappeared. Now, why?
Well, maybe to look for a job.
He wasn't looking for a job early this morning.
Early this morning?
When Harry Landman was killed.
Well, there's there is somebody who knows where Dickie was then.
Well, who's that?
It's a woman. And you've got to find her.
What's her name?
I don't know.
Can you give us any information about her? Description?
She has dark hair and she's medium height.
Well, go on,
huh? That's all I know.
Mrs. Keith, that description fits about half the women in this town.
Yes, but there must be some way that you could trace her.
Don't count on it, Mrs. Keith. That knife's been identified by Mr. Landman's secretary. Well, you recognize it, don't you? Landman brought it back from Hawaii a few years ago, gave it to your husband for his birthday.
Listen, I know how she can be traced. I know how she can be traced, mm-hmm. That woman who can prove that Dickie's innocent.
Mrs. Keith.
No, there's somebody who has seen her, who knows her. And if Lumpy sees her again, he'll recognize her.
Okay. Just tell me who Lumpy is and I'll go have a talk with him.
Oh, no, you can't.
Why not?
Because he can't talk. I mean, he's a 2-year-old. It's my child.
Oh, now, look, Mrs. Keith.
No, you've got to listen to me. Since I got a job, Dickie's been taking care of him. Well, don't you see, he was meeting her somewhere, but he had Lumpy along. And she made quite an impression. The pretty lady, that's what Lumpy calls her. His first sentence, he's just learning to talk, and that's the first time he put a kind of sentence together. Go see pretty lady. That's what he says whenever he knows that Dickie's taking him out. Well, if he sees the pretty lady again, he can identify her. Don't you see, we could take Lumpy to the park where Dickie took him every single morning, and we could start from there. It's a chance. Maybe 1 in 1,000, but it's worth trying.
Mrs. Keith, this beats anything I ever heard in 20 years on homicide. Every case, we get crazy information. We get tips from psychopaths, confessions from cranks. But this beats
all
the
right.
whole...
All right, I'll find her myself. I'll find her myself. Know where we're going, Lumpy? To see the pretty lady.
With Daddy?
No, just us.
Go see pretty lady.
Uh-huh. Now, which way, Lumpy? Which way do we go?
Go see pretty lady.
For a moment, feeling the warm early morning sun and hearing the same normal voices of children in the park, I decided I was out of my mind. It was crazy to think I could find her that way, dragging Lumpy into it, using a 2-year-old to track her down. And he seemed to forget all about it, attracted by the more immediate joys of the sandpile. A couple of hours went by, and then Lumpy came trotting over to me with his one sentence.
Go see pretty lady.
That was it. The pretty lady didn't come to the park. Lumpy and his father visited her. But where? Maybe in the neighborhood. It was worth a try. Anything was worth a try. Dickie might be a crazy, mixed-up kid and a faithless husband, but one thing I knew for sure, he was not a murderer. How about this street, Lumpy?
Go see pretty lady.
On this street, Lumpy? This the street where pretty lady lives? I turned up cross streets, I circled blocks, I drove on until Lumpy began to get restless and lose interest. How about this street, Lumpy? Darling, when we get to the pretty lady, do you know what we're going to have? Chocolate ice cream and marshmallow cookies and toys?
Hey, lady!
Where? I slammed my foot down on the brake. The way Lumpy bounced off the seat, the way his eyes got wide with expectation, I knew that I was in luck. He pulled me like a puppy on a leash. He pointed to a house across the street, an old house. The downstairs was used as an interior decorator's studio.
Hey, lady!
We were just getting out of the car when I swung Lumpy around and slammed the door. The woman coming out of the house was a pretty lady, all right. A very pretty lady, of medium height, with dark hair. As soon as I left Lumpy with Mrs. Vogel, I hurried back. The sign downstairs read, Maurice Byrne, Fine Interiors. I went in. A tall man with a blunt nose came toward me. The deep, regular waves in his yellow hair must have taken plenty of time and attention. And he had an off-balance smile like a man with something stuck in his teeth.
Good afternoon.
I'm looking for the woman who lives upstairs. I don't remember her name.
Upstairs?
Yes.
There are 3 apartments upstairs.
3?
One is occupied by Joe Courtney, an electrician. He threw his wife out a few months ago. I don't think she's back yet.
Well, what about the other 2?
Well, there's Farley McLean and his wife.
Is she an attractive woman?
The last time I saw Mrs. McLean, she had an ugly gash running the length of her throat and up one side of her face, as if someone had slashed her with an axe.
With an axe?
There are a couple of old hams who get an occasional bit part in pictures. They're always practicing makeup. Don't go near them at night.
No, no, the woman I'm looking for, she has dark hair.
Oh? A beautiful woman with an expensive look?
You know her?
Not yet. She's new here. She still ignores me, which should give you an idea of how discriminating she is.
So I wonder if you could tell me her name and where I could get in touch with her right now.
I'm afraid not. How do I know you're not serving a summons or maybe a bill collector?
Oh, no, 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 it's nothing like that. This is something very personal, but it's terribly important. Really, I must find her for her own good, as well as for somebody else's, somebody that she can help. And if I don't find her, the police will.
Her name is Alice Evans. She's a model at Maison Chic, the exclusive dressmaker.
The saleswomen were a little startled when I walked past them toward the dressing room. The way my hair was blown, I looked like a neglected sheepdog. She glanced up at me from a long mirrored table where she was putting the finishing touches on her street makeup.
Yes?
I'm Dickie's wife.
Congratulations. Who is he?
Oh, please, please, I know everything. And you're the only person who can save him.
Save him from what?
I know, you don't want to get mixed up in this, but Dickie's facing a murder charge, and you've got to tell the police that he was with you when Harry Landman was killed.
What is this, a gag? You've got me mixed up with a couple of other women.
Please, I'm only thinking of Dickie.
I don't know your husband. I never laid eyes on him.
If you care anything about him...
Me? Why did you pick on me? Of all the women in this town, why me?
If you don't go to the police, I will, and I'll tell them everything.
I tell you, I don't know your husband. I never saw him. I never spoke a word to him.
I understand how you feel,
you
but...
do. Then be a good girl and go away.
Listen, if you don't want to get involved, your name might be kept out of it. I'm sure that the police would cooperate. Just tell me, where were you and Dickie that night?
You're raving mad.
If I could find somebody else who saw him there, you won't be dragged into this at all.
I'm getting out of here.
No, not till you tell me what happened. Oh! My head dropped. I remembered the lovely crystal bottle in her hand, and then a couple of saleswomen were helping me to my feet. I was reeking of cologne and spattered with broken glass, and Alice Evans was gone. She was obviously panic-struck, and I had to press this advantage, so I hurried back to her house. The hall was dark, and I struck a match to look at the names on the mailboxes, and then I felt the gun in my back.
Why don't you leave me alone?
You were with Dickie that night, and you can't help him.
I don't know your husband, but you know plenty about me, don't you? You know enough to come looking for me here.
Where else would I look? You live here.
I live in a pink house in the hills with an iron dog at the front door.
But that's Harry Lammons. You! The door seemed closer as if it moved. The door from the hall to Maurice Byrne, Fine Interiors. It was crazy and desperate and clumsy the way I knocked the gun aside and got through the door. Hurry! Oh, hurry, get the police. She killed him.
Don't be silly, Mrs. Keith. She's the first one the police checked and double-checked. They know she was in Las Vegas that night. Lock the door, Alice.
You said there was nothing to worry about.
There isn't.
Why did she come here looking for me?
I'm not sure. I can't figure out what she knows.
You said there wouldn't be any suspicion. You had a made-to-order fall guy, a perfect dupe.
Fall guy? Dickie?
You're a clever woman, Mrs. Keith. I don't know how you managed to trace Alice here, but it was clever. In a suicidal way.
You, I've seen you somewhere. Long ago.
Of course. In one of Dickie's early pictures. He came walking by here with Lumpy a few months ago. The first time I saw him in years.
And I know why he kept coming back.
He was lonely. He needed somebody sympathetic to talk to. About how he hated Landman. How Landman had given him a dirty deal. And one day he brought in that beautiful pearl-handled knife.
Here.
Wanted to know if it was worth $50. If I could use it in some decorating scheme.
Then you killed Landman. It was you.
$50. Such ingratitude. A knife that Harry Landman gave him as a birthday present. Do you know how much that knife was worth to Alice and me? $200,000. Left by her late, unlamented husband.
And who would believe Dickie?
Of course, it wasn't as decorative as, say, this silver candlestick.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry you traced her here.
No.
Sometimes the less people know, the smarter they are.
No! 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 I saw the blood trickle down his hand and onto the candlestick. And the next thing I knew, the police were looking down at me over the edge of a dark, deep well. Only it wasn't a well. It was an elegant sofa at Maurice Byrne's Fine Interiors.
Now, take it easy, Mrs. Keith.
When you feel better, I guess you and your husband can go home together.
Did he?
Everything's okay, Jean. I even picked up Lumpy on the way here.
Well, how did you... I mean, where...
I was running away from everything. When I heard the police were looking for me, I came back.
You know, funny thing, we had a man following you, Mrs. Keith, since you left Lamon's house. Thought you might lead us to your husband. Instead...
Where, Lumpy?
Pretty lady.
Where? Oh. No. No, it can't be.
That's the only pretty lady Lumpy ever saw around here, Jean.
That portrait on the wall?
It was going to be a surprise. A painter, Burnnose, did it from a photograph of you.
Me?
It's going to be a birthday present.
Me? The pretty lady I was looking for.
Yeah, it set me back $50. I sold that pearl-handled knife to Byrne to get the $50 to pay for it.
Suspense. In which Miss Mercedes McCambridge starred in America's Boyfriend, written by Sidney Renthal. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with The Twist is Murder, starring Raymond Burr. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
A William N. Robeson production of Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from July 21st, 1957, first heard on CBS. And with our cases now closed in this hour of mystery, that does it for Tune 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.